Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening. You're tuned in to Columbo Chronicles at Blog Talk Radio. Follow the mover and shaker, award-winning author and host, seen on TV and radio, Rose Columbo. Every Wednesday, Rose interviews prominent experts and authors on politics and social justice. Call in and listen or ask the guest the question at 646-564-9742. Now, here's Rose.
Hi, everyone. Here's the Rose, Rose Columbo, right here for you at Blog Talk Radio Worldwide, online talk radio. Yeah, I used to be on AM, FM, and now we have the worldwide online radio, so that makes it even better because we reach people around the world in various countries. Welcome from around the world. Glad you could listen in. Of course, you do have to check the time in your state and your country every Wednesday, but we're here with prominent guests from around the world who are experts and authors who share their expertise and their information to empower us, enlighten us, and entertain us, and educate us. So every week, we have a different author, and if you missed that particular author or expert, you can come back because the shows are archived at www.blogtalkradio.com/Columbo Chronicles. Scroll on down and check out your favorite topics and your favorite guests and take a listen. And tonight we have a very special guest. She is Australian bred, and her name is Mary Mann, and she's been a longtime resident in Southern California, distinguished author of the book, There Are No Enemies. And Dr. Mann received her PhD from the University of Southern California. She's going to share her book about humanity, and she's also going to share her information and her views on Martin Luther King, because on Monday we celebrated Martin Luther King Day, and that will be discussed most of the week. A great man who fought for equal rights for all people, according to the Constitution of the United States of America. And he is a man who people respect and will always cherish and remember. He left his legacy, and we want to keep that inspiration going here in the good old USA, where we want to unite people, bring people together, legal Americans. And as far as immigration goes, Americans love immigrants, but they love legal immigrants to come into our country because we have legal laws that are guaranteed and established by the supreme laws of the land, the U.S. Constitution. So, yes, we are a nation of legal immigrants, and we are a nation of natural-born Americans, Native Americans. And we are this big melting pot. But in order for us to all unite and get along and know our neighbors, then that's why our framers set out to create and approve, at great sacrifice to them and their families, the U.S. Constitution and the supreme laws of the land, made us a republic operated by the rule of law, and establish three branches of government, and establish that the people, the legal Americans, we the people, are the government. And so they gave us our freedom, our liberties, our rights, and our sovereignty. And we need to respect our laws just as we respect the laws of foreign nations. And foreigners need to respect our laws. So it's not about the people. is about the law. And the government and the MSM and the American people need to understand this is not about foreigners. It's about the law. We either have laws or we don't have laws. And what laws do is they create a civilized nation so we do know who our neighbors are. And if Americans must follow the law, then foreigners must follow the law as well. That is called assimilation and allegiance to the U.S. Constitution and being part of America and being a proud American. So welcome all legal, naturalized Americans. And on that note, I'll take a little break because we have a really special guest coming up on Authors in on the World of Authors and Experts. And her name is Dr. Mary Mann. She earned her degree from the University of Southern California, and she wrote a popular book. She's a distinguished author, and the title is There Are No Enemies. She's going to share her views on humanity, and she's also going to share her views on Martin Luther King, and we will celebrate Martin Luther King Day all week, in fact, because everyone loves Martin Luther King. Great, great American who definitely upheld, defended, protected, and preserved the Constitution of the United States, equality for all people. And may he rest in peace. And now we'll take a little break, and we'll be right back on Colombo Chronicles Live with the Rose, Rose Colombo.
Listening is an art that humans are losing to the world of robots. Robots don't have any tone or human feelings. The addiction to communicate by texting isn't going away. People are feeling isolated, lonely, frustrated. People need people willing to listen to them. Can you imagine getting a text message that read, "You're fired," or "Hi, would you marry me?" It is happening. Colombo Chronicles is the option and the answer to human communication. Colombo Chronicles provides email access to your ideas and issues. Take advantage of this opportunity now. Go to ColomboChronicles.com. Click on subscribe today. Colombo is spelled C-O-L-O-M-B-O Chronicles. Fill out the form, submit it, bookmark and subscribe today. Remember the name, ColomboChronicles.com.
Keeping up with the news these days is like keeping up with the car. Well, you get the idea. There's a lot of yelling and screaming. Intelligent discussion, not so much. Ready for something refreshing, thought-provoking, and friendly? Okay, grab your favorite hot or cold drink, sit down, and listen to a friendly voice. The Colombo Chronicles Live with Rose Colombo on Blog Talk Radio. Every Wednesday night at 8 on the West Coast, or 11 for anyone sleepless on the East Coast, Rose Colombo welcomes dynamic authors and experts on a myriad of human interest topics. From politics to love, the environment, the mafia, healthcare, and more. It's 60 minutes of original entertainment and intriguing information with the top VIP guests. Senator John DeCamp exposing the Franklin cover-up. Dr. Tony O'Donnell, the herb doc. Dr. Alan Keyes discussing the White House. So, from Rose Colombo's home on the Colombo Chronicles Live to your home, Colombo says she doesn't want to have to send the familia to make sure you are listening.
Colombo Chronicles Live. Colombo is on their trail. Listen up at Colombo Chronicles Live.
Yes, listen up. Listen up to Colombo Chronicles Live. And now we are going to enter into the world of authors and experts with our very special guest, Dr. Mary Mann. And we're going to say hello to her and talk about her book, There Are No Enemies. And then she's going to give us some views of Martin Luther King, because this is the week we celebrate Martin Luther King, and Monday was Martin Luther King Day. So let's see what she has to say about There Are No Enemies. She's a very distinguished author with this very popular book. So let's go ahead and say hello. Hi, Dr. Mary. How are you today?
I'm doing great, and thank you very much for having me back. I really appreciate it, especially at this very auspicious time.
Yes, and I appreciate your taking the time to be with Columbo Chronicles and myself, the Rose, and because it is an interesting time and a challenging time that we are living in, and your book expresses that, and I thoroughly approve of being able to express and invite people to learn more about how to unite mankind in a positive way. So, Dr. Mary Mann, why don't you tell our audience why you wrote the book, There Are No Enemies?
Well, I started my writing career really at the beginning of the Second World War. My father had been in the First World War, and that First World War was the war to end all wars. So we grew up as children thinking, you know, that there would be no war anymore. And then when the Second World War started, that was all broken. And that Second World War was really worse than the first one. And even though I was just a child, I made a decision in my mind that I was going to spend the rest of my life trying to figure out why we have these wars. And after a whole lifetime of study, I have come, and a lot of writing about these wars, I came up with the thought of there are no enemies, which people think is crazy. But the thing is that if each one of us in our heart decides that we don't have an enemy, and if everybody else or the majority of the people in the world decide that they do not have an enemy, that's the time when the majority reaches that point. That's the time that we will have peace in the world. Now, it may be a long way away, but it may not be also. And when Martin Luther King was the most spiritual leader, I believe, that this country has really ever had, and this made a great contribution to the world by, having Martin Luther King as one of its people. Because when he stood out there, you know, I have a dream that my little children will all work together, that we will not have any more color barriers, and we will not have any more education barriers, and there will be, we'll have equality in the world. And when we can reach that point, that's the time that we will have peace. And so the basis of this book is the understanding that every one of us is connected to the life force of the universe, which we really, all of the religions in the world really pay allegiance to, whatever they call God, by what, any name or no name. And I studied the science of it, and scientifically, the life force of the universe is really our God, and we're all responsible to that God. And that God shows us that everything in the world is entitled to live to its fullest capacity. And as human beings, we are the most intelligent, at least no one else has been decided to be more intelligent than we are at the moment. So we need to be custodians of the world. And how we are connected to the life force is through our conscience. Each time we do an act, our conscience will tell us whether that act is in harmony with the life force of the universe, which basically begins with preservation for life. I mean, and the simple thing is, if we see somebody hurt, we're going to try to help that person. And then once we do that, then we understand that we're all equal before God. That's the thing that Martin Luther King was saying. We are all equal before God. And this goes way back to Aristotle and the great philosophers and Gandhi and Buddha and everybody else. And we need to treat this day with great reverence not playing around on Martin Luther King Day. This is a day for us to think about our neighbors and to think about how we can love our neighbors and bring out everybody together so we can have peace in the world. And we will have peace in the world when enough people believe that this will happen, that this can happen, and if we love our neighbors as ourselves. And then we have our communities, and of course we have to govern our communities as well. So it's easy to say, you know, just each person can, you know, decide to bring peace into the world, but we also have to have our governments. And I was just listening to what you were saying before, and integrity is very important. One of the things that we need to do is understand that we have to be truthful in everything we say, that we have trust in each other. And when we have trust in each other, then we can all agree on certain things. We can agree on the ways to go. And another thing about Reverence for Life is, in our language, we need to speak to each other civilly. We need to respect each other. And we don't need to be denigrating each other in language in any way. And once we understand this, then each one of us from our heart can move forward in the world.
Well, yes, and I agree with everything you said. But on the other hand, you were talking about conscience. Not all people have a conscience. Some people are sociopaths, psychopaths, and pathological liars. And so do you think that people are born without a conscience, or do you think that conscience can be developed? Do you think conscience is taught?
No, I believe we are all born with a connection to the life force of the universe. And we become aware of it as a conscience when we are children. It's not taught, it's embedded in ourselves. It's part of our DNA. Now, there are some, you know, psychopaths or things like that which are deviations from that, and then those people can be helped. There are two things that I don't understand in the world. One thing is the Holocaust. During the Holocaust, people killed other human beings a terrible extent. I don't understand that. I don't understand that. There was no conscience. There was a conscience in a lot of people, but there was no prevailing conscience. However, within one generation, after that happened, within one generation, Germany has grown up to be a really great nation. It's one of the leading nations in the world. And then you take America. There were people in America. This is the second thing I don't understand in the world. There were people in America who were slave traders. They went to another country. They took human beings and they sold them. And I'm unable to understand that. There was no conscience in that. The conscience is born with us. But this country can pull through it and pull through the hatred. It seems to be kind of resurfacing a little bit now, which is very, very troubling. So that is why we need to look back to Martin Luther King, even though, you know, he's a lot closer to us than a lot of the other great philosophers. But we can't ignore the things that he had to say, because this country must pull out of this. This is a great country. And we have to understand that we all do have a conscience, but we also all do have free will. And with our free will, our conscience may dictate something to us, but then we may decide to do something different. That's a different thing.
Yes.
And
you stated in your book that the greatest gift we have is language, and the war machine has nothing on it. So what do you mean by that, that the greatest gift we have is language and that the war machine has nothing on it?
Because we can speak to each other. We can understand each other. when we ask each other questions about what we believe, even what's happening in the country today, this great schism between two parties. I'm Australian, so I don't vote. So I'm not Republican or Democrat. But I look at both of these parties, and I don't understand. You know, we all have our language. If there's a difficulty, if there's something we want to resolve, we have a wonderful language. We talk to each other and we express our thoughts and our understandings, and then we arrive at something that is human and that matches the thoughts of everyone. So language is the preventer of war, because we can, and language is the preventer of great explosions and all this kind of thing, providing we all understand that reverence for life also means taking our language and using it the way it should be used, civilly and with meaning. As Shakespeare said, let the word speak for the action and the action speak for the word, which is truth and civility. Those are things that can prevent war. Wars only occur when people stop talking to each other, really, and they take fixed positions.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So communication is the key to world peace, basically, because if we aren't talking and we aren't communicating, it appears to be what you're saying, in a positive manner, then
yes,
we are losing our ability and our opportunity to keep peace around the world, at least make it neutral so we aren't all living in danger as we are today with all of the high-tech nuclear weapons that are out there today. So do you think that men have a tendency to want to play soldier and go to war more than women?
Yes, I do. They've had control of the universe for 2,000 years. And the women are born with a womb. Women are the givers of life. To every woman, every baby could be her baby. Every child could be her child. And that's regardless of color, skin, or anything else. It has nothing to do with it. A woman is connected to children. A woman is connected in a visceral way, and it's really, I call it belongingness. And this is before we start to have actions in the world. For instance, a child, you know, when a child is born, it's a baby, and we love it. Everybody loves it. And then it starts to grow up, and it starts to have a language, and it starts to have awareness of the world. And this is where men have, in the past, because they're bigger and stronger physically, that they have some kind of a superiority over the woman. And for these last 2,000 years, that's basically been the case, because when you get into the actions of the world, you judge just by deeds. Men judge each other by deeds, and they hate a deed, and they also seem to have a bit more hatred than women do. Women mostly love. You can't hurt the thing that you give life to. And men come into the world like later than women, and they have a tendency to judge each other by deeds. And then, you know, they fight for this and they fight for that. And they've been able to do that in the past because women have had to take care of the new generation. Women have always, you know, if a child is in danger, a woman will take care of it rather than going into a big argument with a man somewhere. So this is the century, this is the generation of the woman, and we don't want superiority, but we must have equality now. When women have equality and women voices are viewed with equal intensity as men's voices are, women are great negotiators. Women know how to use language. You put a bunch of women together and they'll start doing things. I mean, I've heard of some people funding things in Africa, and they only fund the women. Why? Because you give something to a woman and she will take care of all the kids in the neighborhood, you know. But you give something to a man and that's not likely to happen. Because the women are connected to the babies when they're born. They're connected to them all through their lives. And the men don't have this connection. I mean, a lot of them do learn it, you know, and they do engage in it. And more of them are understanding it now. And I think, I mean, I thought that with Hillary, as all women, I believe, in this country, or most women, did feel that we were going to start this new century with a big boom. This is the century of the woman. We had a big crash at the beginning of it, but you know, it's only 2018. We're only 20 years in, so we can finish the rest of this millennium really as the millennium of the woman, which will bring equality. Once we have gender equality, we have a lot better chance at having peace than allowing the men to just fight each other on the basis of their deeds and their actions, not on who they are. You know, a woman looks at another human being and she sees the essence of that person, and she loves, deep down she loves it, and she's prepared to forgive a whole lot of stuff of that person, you know, because she might have her own children and they'll do things that maybe she doesn't like, but because her essence is in that child, she's going to love that child forever. And that goes on. That's how women work. They love human beings, and they forgive a lot of actions of the men. And over the years, they've forgiven a lot of actions of the men. But now they have to understand that the woman's brain is just as smart as the guy's brain. And so they have to start using their skills, you know, to give us a better world than we've had over the last 2,000 years.
Yeah, women are very forgiving, aren't they? But there's a lot of reasons that women are forgiving, because women, like you say, haven't reached and finally crashed the glass ceiling to that point of becoming a president of the United States of America or whatever, or other countries. And so women with children have a tendency to be more forgiving because they want to make sure their children are being taken care of.
Yes.
And it's their priority, you know. So they
yes.
will take more, they will bend more, they will be more flexible, whereas the
yes.
man isn't that flexible as a woman, and
right.
In my opinion. So I think
and he
that,
judges by actions.
Yes, and I think they're more black and white too, men. I think they, you know, like you said, women, you know, they can see the essence or the goodness in somebody, or you know,
in
and,
everybody,
the qualities.
In
yeah, and so, and then the men though, they actually do judge by action and the book by the cover, and that's it. They don't have that same essence as the woman does. So I know that Aristotle was a big inspiration in your life. So why do you feel that Aristotle was you're indebted to Aristotle for so much inspiration?
Well, he talked about the science of being all together, and it was a great philosophy. Because with that, you can move on from that philosophy to an understanding that the world is an integrated universe. And, you know, for quite a number of years, we've separated reason, you know, and men have felt that reason was the dominant thing. But Aristotle said, no, he began earlier than them. And he said, you know, this is the whole universe is one universe. It's all integrated, and he called it the science of being all together. And I worked very hard with that, and then finally I came up, because a lot of the wars have been brought about by religion, by fighting about, you know, what they call one God, and it's this prophet is better than that prophet, and they fight, and they still are fighting. I mean, even, you know, some people fighting in the Islamic religion about whether somebody is descended from a son or a nephew or something like that. And you know, that's really not very smart. But what I studied was then science, and science is on the same science and spirituality are on the same continuum, and this is what Aristotle was talking about in his way. But of course, you know, we've come 2,000 years on from that, but now if we can understand that the great life force of the universe, there's no distinction between science and spirituality anymore. So that takes away a whole lot of the reason for people being angry and wanting to be better than the next one and so forth. And then, of course, Aristotle wrote all these beautiful things about tragedy and how to understand tragedy and hubris. And the thing that's sort of happening now is hubris. And hubris, in the great tragedies, hubris always falls. And so it depends how long the hubris is going to go on, but then it does fall in the end. And so we can get help from Aristotle with that when things appear to us to be going totally out of control and out of the path that our lives should be, which is living in harmony with the universe, then we know that at some point, hopefully soon, it will fall back into being in harmony with the universe. One of the things that Aristotle didn't really get into that much was the influence of money. And in the second version of the book, There Are No Enemies, I had to concentrate on a second god, which he was brought into the universe 200 years, and that is the god of money. With the god of money, you can have a deal, a transaction, where you buy something and you sell something and you give money for it. And in a transaction, you don't need a conscience. It's not necessary to have a conscience, which is a big thing that is troubling our society at the moment. For instance, if somebody wants to build an oil well, they can just go ahead and do it, and then they can say that all the money is theirs, you know. But it's not.
Mm-hmm.
Why? Because they've used Mother Earth. They've used all the resources of our planet, and we're supposed to be the custodians of it. They have used all the services of other people, and they need to understand that you can't just live in order to make money. That money, conscience in transactions, in business deals, have to be organized by the humans who make it. And if those humans who do the transactions are more interested in making the money than they are in serving God, the God of the universe, that's when we're in a lot of trouble in this country right now because of that. We have tremendous inequality in this country, but it all can be understood if people really understand the meaning of money. And money is only something to oil to grease the wheels of a transaction and so forth. But the people in every transaction, all transactions are made by human beings. And human beings.
Yes, but also, aren't we talking about greed too?
Yes, greed. Well, that's the thing. If a human has tremendous greed, so much that they want 20 houses and they want all the money to buy 20 houses, that's a problem, because they are giving allegiance to the god of money instead of understanding that we have to now bring money into harmony with organic nature. Money has to have some relationship to human beings, different from the relationship that it has now. And we can do it. It's possible.
And isn't that greed for money creating egos that are inflated egos, and then doesn't that lead to some people believing they are the icons, they are the gods, they do want to be worshipped, they are the dictators of the world, and that greed becomes their obsession until they end up like in World War II, where they want to control everything, everyone, and own everything. And I think what you're just explained is that very danger that humanity faces when they aren't recognizing what is happening.
Yes.
And that's why one of the reasons I think your book, There Are No Enemies, is very important for people to understand that we are living in a material world, and everything
yes.
we see on TV and radio and on the internet is they're even using us to monitor us to see what we purchase for
yes.
the greed that's going on
yes.
by the elite, wealthy globalists who just can't
yes.
get enough money. It does
yes.
appear.
Yes. Yes. Go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, do ethics and spirituality, are they the two important, are those two of the important values that people need to put under control when they are looking at becoming successful entrepreneurs and moving on up the ladder of success in the material world?
Yes, absolutely. For instance, take the big blow up in the Gulf. I think it was in 2010 when there were three different organizations who were working that oil thing off the coast, and it exploded. All three of the companies involved in that had made decisions during the course of constructing that, had made decisions to shortcut safety rules in order to make more money. And so one of the things to look at when people are doing business deals is whether they are actually hurting human beings in what they're doing. And that's where their conscience tells them, like, I'm sure that those three companies who built that thing in the Gulf, around the Gulf Coast, they all knew, all of them knew, that by not taking these precautions, they were putting human beings at risk, okay? They had free will. They made the choice. And why did they make the choice? Because they wanted to make more money, you see? So they
and they
the
not only put human beings at risk, they put the ocean life at risk as well.
That's right. They put the planet, they put human beings at risk. And even now, with the cold in Virginia that's been started up again, this is hurting our planet, you know. And you can understand people do have to make a living, okay? And that's a responsibility of the government. When our government decides that we have to take care of our planet and we don't want to be doing these things, the government also, since we are our own government, the government also has to look at the human beings and the people who are working these things, which we have now decided are detrimental to our planet. The government has to put in force something to consider these human beings and move them into something else where they can make a living and not live penniless because some big plant has been moved away from them, you know, for the sake of saving our planet. So these things can all be taken care of, providing people that we elect to our government offices are elected because people know that they have a conscience and that they understand people and that they're not going to act away from hurting people just because they want to make a lot of money. And that happens with our election as well. We think this country is a democracy. It's really not. It's somebody said, why are you calling it a democracy? It's a republic. But it really, we like to think it's a democracy, and that's what, you know, the great Greek philosophers taught us about philosophy. I'm Australian, and in Australia, voting is compulsory. You get fined if you don't vote. Well, 98% of the people vote. And I know it's a horror to talk about that, about this in America. But for 1 minute, just think, just imagine, if this country, like when the healthcare came in, it was an opportunity, a marvelous opportunity, because if you didn't get health care, you're going to be fined at the end of the year. Well, that was a protocol for us to consider about voting, because if people have to vote, then, you know, that's the price you pay for living in a democracy. Just think of all the money you could save if everybody decided, okay, everybody's going to vote, okay? Now, I get things on my email all the time asking me to contribute to people are elected in this country because they raise a whole lot of money, you know? So we have a whole slew of people trying to get into the government, and they put out all this money, and they're asking everybody for money, money, money. If you just thought for a moment, just imagine, you know, if people are going to have to vote anyway, why do you need to spend all that money to try to get them out? They're going to have to get out or pay a fine. You don't have to spend a whole lot of money to make people vote, because what does it do? It brings people into government who are sponsored by the people who have millions and zillions of dollars, which is not in harmony with organic nature. You know, money has to be brought into harmony with organic nature, and there needs to be, this is a long term vision, there needs to be some understanding that there's a certain amount of money that can be allocated to each human being. There's no reason why we should have people in gated communities with only 20 homes, and then you get around the corner and you have a person who doesn't even have enough money to buy food. There's something wrong there, you know.
Well, it's really wrong, because you just touched a nerve with me, because in California they just passed a law that the good Americans cannot feed the homeless, hungry Americans any longer, or you can get arrested. I am just, you know, it goes back to your ethics and spirituality and working together. And I don't understand that at all, period, and why legislators who are comfortable living off the taxpayers with benefits and lifetime retirements and will not go hungry would punish the American people who are hungry and down and out on their luck.
Well, lots of times people who have a lot of wealth and they're able to accumulate a lot of wealth, they, in their defense, they don't mix. They don't see, like Jesus said, it's easier for, I think, an elephant to go through the eye of a needle than a wise man to, it's easier for an elephant to go through the eye of a needle than a rich man to enter the kingdom of heaven. Sometimes people, very wealthy people, they never have the opportunity to sit on the seat of a metro and to meet ordinary, everyday people. They really don't. They get in their cars and they drive from this place to that. They go to these really, you know, big restaurants and things like that. And they really don't give themselves the opportunity to go out among the people. That was one of the things that the Martin Luther King Day did. I mean, I look at Barack Obama on Martin Luther King Day. I believe he went out and helped feed the homeless. You know, Martin Luther King Day is a time for people who don't understand other people, you know, people who have a whole lot of money. And if you have a whole lot of money and you've turned off your conscience, that's the time you can say, okay, you're going to be fined if you feed the homeless. They have to turn their conscience off to do that. That's number one. And number two, they need to, you know, in Los Angeles on Thanksgiving and Christmas, there are a lot of very important people who come down and feed the homeless. And that way they try. Sometimes it's the only one day of their lives that they ever get to meet people who are struggling. Sometimes, you know, people are all born with different gifts and different opportunities. And people who are wealthy need to thank God for their opportunities and their gifts and their abilities to be able to be where they don't have to worry about money. But they don't need to have all that excess money. They need to have a conscience which says, look, I've got all this. I've got to figure out a way to help the people who are not as well off as I am, who are not given all the gifts of smarts to do this and that, and who have to struggle to get an education, who absolutely start off with nothing. We have to try to understand people like that. And until they start to, and not just live in your own universe and never meet up with people like that. You know, it's people who are wealthy need to somehow move among the rest of the people. And I'm talking about like 2% on the top, you know. And they need to understand that what Martin Luther King said, everybody is born equal before God. And they need to have equal opportunity to grow up to the best of their potential, every single one of them. And they need to be encouraged. And that's where women have always been the encouragers and helping people, you know, get themselves together. And because they've spent so much time doing that, the men have taken control of the government. And when they take control of the government, they often don't see the things that women see about what's happening to our children, because a lot of the problems begin in childhood, and children need to be encouraged and educated, and they need to be properly fed. I know in California they have the food program where, and it's amazing the number of children who absolutely need that. That's sometimes the only meal they get is the meal they get at school, you know. And the legislators need to understand that. And this is a great country, but you can't be just a great country because you're wealthy. You also have to be a great country because of the ideals and the dreams, you know, of people like Martin Luther King, who, you know, and John Kennedy, and people who uplifted us. You know, when you need people to uplift you and know that, you know, there is a great potential in this country, and never ever forget the people who need your help. Just hold out a hand and, you know, help a child with this or that. But they don't do it if they turn off their conscience. They just think about making money, and they see anybody who is taking money, you know, like the homeless, you going and feeding the homeless. Why feed the homeless? It's crazy.
Yeah, it is. It is very disturbing, especially, you know, because we live in a beautiful country, a great country. We're blessed to be born in this country. And when we forget, you know, that part of our responsibility is to lend a helping hand to others when we can, then, and we don't get involved in our government, and we don't, you can be involved on the city level, the county level, the state level. You don't necessarily have to be involved on the federal level. You can be involved in your own community to make that community better and start your process of having ethics and spirituality and positivity brought back. As you wrote in your book, there are no enemies. And unfortunately, we're coming to the end of our wonderful conversation. I just love it. So before I give you your time to shine to tell us all about your book and how to get your book and any social media you have, I was wondering, I think you've written a play called Anzac, and I was wondering what that's all about.
Well, Anzac is a trip through the 20th century, because the 20th century was the century of war, and it begins with a story which is from real life, you know, of a soldier who was my father going through the First World War, and he was reported killed twice, but he survived, and then he had a good family in Australia, but from the town that he enlisted, killed of those that whole generation. So in the plays that I, in the Anzac, I tried to take the woman's point of view of, you know, why men kill each other and the damage it does to our whole world when this happens. And it's, and that was the First World War, and then of course the Second World War created, you know, more more which are real life characters, and then the ending of it really is the beginning of there are no enemies, because we have to learn how to live with each other and how to have this vision of peace. And the main character always had this vision of peace. A vision of peace can never die. You can't kill a vision of peace. So we can have a vision of peace, but we need to try to make it a reality, and we need to make sure that those global wars were ended with the 20th century. And with this century that we're in now, that we're going to move forward and not have those wars anymore that we had in the 20th century.
That sounds wonderful, and definitely it's
and
right
all my
on
books
point.
Are on, all of my books
well,
are on Amazon.
Okay, Mary, Dr. Mary Mann, I know your book is There Are No Enemies, and it is on Amazon.com, but do you have any website or any social media that you'd like to share with the audience?
Yes, I do. I do have a website. It's www, and then it's Mary for Mary. Because there are a lot of Mary Manns in the world, I also use my middle name, which was given to me by my father, Anita, A-N-N-E-T-A, Mary Anita Mann. But if you go on Google and just put Mary A. Mann, you'll be directed to the website, which lists the 10 books that I have written. I've written plays, and I've written another little book, Thuggin and Natasha, about the gun. I personified the gun. I wrote that especially for American children who are being killed by guns. That was written especially for them, and we've toured it to a number of schools, and it only takes 45 minutes, and it's a nice little book if anybody wants to read it, but it's written in rap. It's written in rap.
Well, actually, I would like you to come back and talk about that. That sounds like a very intriguing and interesting and important topic. And I invite you to come back and discuss that.
Yeah, the gun is put on trial in Thuggin and Natasha. The gun is put on trial. He's personified. He's put on trial together with the person who used him, Suki, and it's from a real-life story of the 1980s when the Korean grocer killed a little black girl. So it's about that, but it's in rap. It's in rap.
Okay.
And but it was especially for these children.
Well, Dr. Mary Mann, and her last name is spelled with two N's, M like Mary, A-N-N. Mary Mann, be sure to Google her name, Mary A. Mann, and be sure to go on Amazon.com, Google her name, or There Are No Enemies, and take a look at all of her wonderful books. And I hope you'll come back and visit us again, and we'll talk about one of the other topics that are intriguing to us and important to you.
Thank you so very much. I appreciate it very much.
You're so welcome, and you have a happy new year, a great 2018.
Thank you, and the same to you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And Dr. Mary Mann has left the building, and what a wonderful, intelligent, and inspiring guest. Be sure to check out her book, There Are No Enemies. And Dr. Mary Mann, M-A-N-N, what a wonderful person. And on top of that, we're going to go over a few of the things that are happening in the news. But first, how about if we take a little break, and we'll come back with that information just for you on Columbo Chronicles Live.
Listen up at Columbo Chronicles Live.
Howdy, folks. Just stopped in by my favorite restaurant, the Horseshoe Cafe. I highly recommend the home-cooked hot meals and piping hot coffee. In fact, it reminds me of my mom's home cooking when I was growing up. The customer service is excellent. Be sure to save room for the world's best desserts. Make sure you try a slice of fresh homemade pie. The Horseshoe Cafe is located at 154 East 4th Street in the heart of Benson, Arizona. The Horseshoe Cafe is right outside of Tombstone, Sierra Vista, and Tucson. Sometimes Patty and Mike stop by to welcome you. The staff at the Horseshoe Cafe looks forward to seeing you. Stop by to eat or relax. Cool down in the desert with a cold beer or your favorite cocktail. That's the Horseshoe Cafe. Oh, and don't tell anyone I told you, but some people think it's haunted. One thing is for sure. Be sure to bring your appetite.
Colombo Chronicles Live. Colombo is on their trail. Listen up at Colombo Chronicles Live.
That's right. Listen up every Wednesday evening from 8 to 9 p.m. Pacific Standard Time right here on the West Coast. Check out the areas in your state, the time in your state and in your country. And I want to welcome all of the countries from around the world who tune in to Colombo Chronicles and also who Google Rose for Justice. That's the number four, Rose for Justice blogs and radio shows. And there are a lot of political blogs on Rose for Justice that will be of interest to you on what is happening not only here in America but around the world. And in the news today, Conservator Forever reports another leaker down. Nobody can believe who the Army just caught. Our Army and the FBI just stopped a very dangerous situation. It appears that one of our military personnel were caught trying to steal government documents and had joined the organization called ISIS. Not a good thing when we're infiltrated in our military and in our law enforcement. Also today, President Donald Trump kisses Bob Dole on the forehead after delivering a tribute. In fact, my mother and I met when I was young, girl. I met Mr. Dole, Senator Dole, and she was president of one of the Women's Republican clubs, and she was very active, and she campaigned for many of the presidents, such as President Reagan. And when he was governor, she also attended his inaugural ball. And she has pictures with Senator Bob Dole as well, beautiful pictures. And so he has served our country for 70 years, and he is a World War II veteran, and he was awarded the Congressional Gold Medal from President Trump, and I think it's well-deserved, and congratulations to Senator Bob Dole. Good news again. Apple, the company Apple, unveils plan to repatriate billions in overseas cash, says it will contribute $300 billion to the economy. They will create 20,000 new jobs here in the good old USA. Looks like jobs are coming back to America. So God bless America, and God bless our politicians who are working to bring jobs back to the American people. And my paisan, the Italian politician, Fontana, he says that migrants will wipe out the white race in a radio interview. And that the European countries are fighting back, including Greece, in diminishing the number of immigrants that have been flooding their nation as well. And there's a tsunami of information set to expose some of the Democrats and rhinos involved in those deep state scandals. So that'll be coming out soon. And a not-so-good story here is in Florida, the largest food stamp fraud bust in history, $20 million, involved a store. The owners were, says, Muslim immigrants arrested, and they had trafficked $20 million in
food stamps, which is fraud, and they were arrested. So that's good news that they were arrested, because we definitely don't need our food stamps ripped off, right? And on that note, we're going to have to close, and until we speak again, remember, injustices can happen to you, and they can happen to me. But together, we can make a positive difference. Remember that you are never alone when you listen to Colombo Chronicles Live.
Rose Colombo is signing off, and she's left the building. Be sure to bookmark and share Colombo Chronicles Live every Wednesday from 8 to 9 p.m. on the West Coast. Or if you're sleepless in the big city, that would be 11 to midnight on the East Coast. Rose Colombo says, remember, you're never alone when you tune in every Wednesday to Colombo Chronicles.